You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
It is indeed time for our catch-up with the Justice Minister. This morning I asked about yesterday's opening of the New Zealand Criminal Cases Review Commission and the restoration of the right to legal representation in the family court. We also have a more holistic discussion about making the justice system less homogenous. Let's get into it. What was the ceremony with Waikato Tainui yesterday? I missed that.
We were opening because the offices in Hamilton were opening it, and they were welcoming us, and they've gifted a name, the Māori name, to the commission, Te Kahu Te Tāri Ture. So that was good. No, and it was just, and had one of their folks had done a piece of artwork, this amazing carving from a piece of old marble, actually, from the Parliament buildings when it was renovated about 20 odd years ago, and had carved this amazing, beautiful piece of work. That is symbolic of sort of conflict and struggle and then sort of reconciliation and coming to terms, which is, you know, not just the story of New Zealand, but partly what the Commission's about.
So
it was very nice, yeah.
Wow. Well, let's start with talking about the new commission then. So now those convicted who believe they've suffered a miscarriage of justice can apply to, as you've said, the New Zealand Criminal Cases Review Commission for an independent review. Where would someone have gone before we'd set up this commission?
They could have gone or applied for what's called the Royal Prerogative of Mercy. I mean, even the name is somewhat sort of intimidating and alienating, the idea to apply for some sort of royal thing. And the reality is that, look, some people knew about it and some people got access to it. Generally, if you were somebody who'd been convicted of something and exhausted your appeal rights, unless your lawyer or somebody in the community knew about the Royal Prerogative of Mercy, you didn't know it was there, and actually not a lot of people found it easy to access. And it's interesting, given the proportion of the prison population who are Māori, the very low proportion of Māori who utilise the Royal Prerogative of Mercy process. So it was my view that, and others, that we needed something that was more systematic and also more accessible. So the Criminal Cases Review Commission would be that. They would proactively go out into prisons and say, this is who we are, this is what we do, and we deal with miscarriages of justice. There have been estimates of the number of people in prison at any one time who could be victims of miscarriage of justice and wrongly convicted, and that could be anywhere between 40 and 50, and a prison population of, you know, between 9 and 10,000. And that is not 40 or 50 wrongful convictions that we should be tolerating.
Mm.
So I expect, you know, we'll see a swag of applications. They'll be triaged. There'll be some that won't be meritorious, but there will be some that are, and we need to get to the bottom of those.
How similar is the configuration of the commission to the Independent Police Complaints Authority?
Well, quite a bit different. I mean, the commission is all... They're all drawn from a variety of different backgrounds. You know, obviously those with a legal background. The Chief Commissioner is Colin Crothers, QC. There's another QC on it. And then you've got people like Professor Tracy McIntosh, who is comes from a science and public policy background and a prison reform background. You've got Virginia Hope, Dr. Virginia Hope, who comes from a health science background and also worked with the ESR. You've got Tangi Utikiri, who's the Deputy Mayor of Palmerston North, who comes from a community background. And then you've got other lawyers like Kingi Snelga, a really talented young lawyer, who's on there. Nigel Hampton, QC, I think I've mentioned. So, a good bunch of people who bring a bunch of disciplines. They'll be the ultimate decision makers. The staff will be people who have investigations experience, coming from a range of different origins for that as well. So, and their job is to receive an application, look at it, decide whether it warrants further investigation, and then, if so, to do a very detailed examination of the trial, the evidence, the parties involved, any new information that sheds a different light on it, apply some of the law, but actually really to take a step back and say, was justice done in this particular case? And if not, how do we ensure justice is done?
Right. It's interesting, you also said that the old process was idiosyncratic when it came to allocating resources. It wasn't widely understood. Do you think there should be other ways in which we seek to make the justice system less homogenous, if you will?
Yeah, that's actually, one of the other things I did yesterday was did a visit to the Auckland District Court, Family Court, and engaged with some of the lawyers and practitioners and the registry staff there. If there is one court that is calling out for moving away from its, I think, sort of monocultural, monochromatic approach, it is the Family Court. And they get that, and we've appointed a whole lot of new judges with, I think, a very diverse ethnic background. But I think even lawyers and others saying we need different approaches, because just applying this, you know, very Eurocentric law to all these families, whether they're, you know, European, Pakeha, Māori, Pacifica, Indian, other ethnicities, I mean, it's not the same for everybody. So, yes, we do need to. We need a system that adheres to those fundamental principles about justice and, you know, no presumptions of guilt and all that sort of stuff, but is accessible because the people who are administering the courts and the law are people who those in the courts recognise because they're part of their community. And we've got a wee ways to go before we can truly say that of our system.
You also were quoted as saying that it's very important for people applying to have faith in the process and trust it, keeping it physically separate from the big centres, ones in Auckland and Wellington, as it's in Hamilton, helps keep people's trust in the system. So I wonder, what about other things that we know contribute to mistrust in the system? We know that symbols of the crown and symbols of policing can be triggering, given how racist policing is a common fact.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that. I know in communities where the approach the police take is different. It is more consistent with, you know, some of the local community values. I see the policing that happened in, for example, the Bay of Plenty and even up north, you know, during the period of the lockdown. It was a different approach. I know, you know, the senior police officers up there, who are Māori police officers, take a different approach because they view themselves as part of the community and to providing safety and protection to the community. It's not about coming charging in with the lights flashing and, you know, truncheons drawn sort of thing. And I think we are beginning to adapt to different ways and different approaches. One of the projects I kicked off at the end of last year was redesigning our courthouses and starting with, actually won't be starting with Tauranga alone. There's about four others in the process of having major upgrades. And I said, we need courthouses where people who come there, whether they are victims of crime, whether they are people charged with offences, whether they are witnesses, whether they are family members going through a family separation, an environment which is safe for them, where there are safe spaces, that is not intimidating, that, you know, the cultural representations within the courthouse are relevant to New Zealand. I'm really pleased with the enthusiasm that has been embraced by, you know, a whole variety of other stakeholders. So in Tauranga now we have a stakeholder group that involves local iwi, local service providers, and the lawyers, obviously, the judges, and a whole bunch of others. And really starting from scratch to say, given the role that the courthouse plays in most towns and cities, and a place of a lot of conflict and stress and tension and distress, how can we work this so that we minimise that possibility and make sure that it's a place where people, when they come to it, feel as if they're coming to a place where they're going to get help and assistance and support, and whether they're an offender, whether they're a victim, whether they're a family going through separation. That's you know, we need to be thinking in those terms, just for the very place where we dispense justice.
It's interesting because our police do go by a motto of safer communities together. Why aren't we seeing changes to make sure that statement runs true for all police forces, not just ones up north who care about the community?
I'm not the police minister, so I don't get around as much. But in fairness, I think the police hierarchy are committed to that. I have been to enough meetings where we've had the presentations both from frontline police and their senior officers with various things that are happening in other parts of the country. I think that is happening to a degree. I don't have a comprehensive overview of every aspect of the way the New Zealand Police Force is conducting itself. But I think at a leadership level, as with the current commissioner and indeed the last commissioner, They are committed to rolling out a different approach and different strategies, which are, you know, which are more community-based.
Mm. Let's finish by delving into more detail about the family court developments, because you're right, I remember asking you about this a couple of months ago when it was still in the works. So the restoration of the right to legal representation in the family court, does that include representation for children? Who is concerned by this new policy?
Yeah, I mean the judges decide, in any case, even before these changes, the judges have the power to decide whether children should be separately represented, and probably actually in 98% of cases, judges actually do that because they just know that, you know, when it comes to children, they've got to have a voice. It's got to be an independent voice. So they've been doing that. Part of the challenge, I think, is to make sure that we get good quality in terms of representation for children. I'm not casting aspersions on laws for children, but some are very good. Some can do with a bit of additional support. And I think actually what we're very keen to see is, and the work has started, is setting a number of standards for those to qualify to be lawyers for children. They've got to meet a number of standards, including cultural standards as well. But the law change basically is mainly for the parents. So the law as it's written at the moment is that apart from a without notice application, you have to start the process of dealing with your relationship separation on your own, filling out forms and things, and you're not allowed to get be legally represented in order to do that. And what that has meant is a lot more time consuming for registry staff, for judges and for others, and I think and just the expectation that somebody going through the very stressful experience of a relationship separation or marriage separation is also in a state of mind to navigate a totally alien legal system. So to me, and right when I was in the opposition when we were debating this law change in 2014, you could just predict what was going to happen. This was not going to allow people to get, you know, to get good justice. So we put that in place, and it's interesting, one of the people I spoke with yesterday we had in the panel discussion was a mediator, and they were a bit fearful that, gee, you put the lawyers back, lawyers don't want mediation. Actually, when it comes to family law, most lawyers do want mediation, but they want their clients and to be well advised, and people going through the process want to be well advised. And I think putting the right to have a lawyer back in the process early on is complementary to a mediative process rather than excluding it. You know, the way it used to be, 5 or 6 years ago, and a lot of separations, the lawyers would, and sometimes with the benefit of mediation, would work out a whole lot of stuff, and so you drilled down to just the things that people couldn't agree on, and that was the stuff that went to court. So a judge would get a case in front of them. 90% of the issues had been resolved because they'd been agreed to, but there were some issues that the parties couldn't agree to, and that was then the subject of adjudication, and that's the way it should be. You know, most separating couples can work out a lot of the stuff that they need to work out. Mm. But there are some things they can't agree on, and we, a third party, can come in and make a decision. But we've got a situation at the moment where everything kind of blows out of proportion and out of control, and it just bogs things down.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little.
The Wire. Cool, Andrew Little, Tera, and you're on 95BFM. Let's head across the ditch, shall we?
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.